Would you introduce yourself, please?
My name is Ratanoff, and I am a singer-songwriter from San Mateo, California.
Oh, let's start right there.
Yeah.
So when somebody hits you with that, that's not even on here. You have to do this. I'm a singer-songwriter. So you see, if you didn't say that, I'd ask you whether this was, you know, whether you're a singer-songwriter, whether it's a project, whether it's a band, or it's a burrito.
Okay.
Right? Because it could be any of those.
Yeah.
But, you know, when people suddenly go, oh, Ratanoff, they're like, they think it's a band, do they not? First and foremost when they hear it?
Yeah.
Like do. Within seconds, they're like, it's a band.
Yeah. Ratanoff has a band type. Yeah. But it sounds like Ratanoff. It's almost like Morrissey, I guess.
You were born in?
San Mateo, California.
You left San Mateo for?
My parents. My dad's from Mexico. And I actually was born in San Mateo. But I grew up in a small little beach town that you've never heard of called Manzanillo. And it's right below Puerto Vallarta.
Wow.
Yeah. And the only thing we're known for is, did you ever see that movie 10 with Bo Derek?
Tell me it was shot there.
Yes.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
So that's
the only thing that we're known for.
So did everybody on the beach look like Bo Derek?
Yeah, most of the people.
Amazing. Wow. I've been taking flights since COVID, but I think I'm heading there right now.
Yeah, and it's funny because like there are direct flights from LA to Manzanillo.
You graduate high school. Mm-hmm. In college, you were like, nah, I want to be a rock and roll star.
Not exactly. At age 8, I did 1 year of community college, of College San Mateo, which it was just a waste of time. So I actually had a friend in Mexico City who I was talking to, and I was like, hey, you know, I don't know what to do and stuff. And he's like, hey, you know, there's like this acting school in Televisa, Mexico.
So this is where you become, Rich, I'm going to help you out here. This is where you become, I'll do it in the announcer voice, a YouTube star.
Oh, no.
With 500,000 views. Next thing you know, you're a heartthrob and you're like, what am I doing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like those.
But was there, but the part that nobody says, was there money there in all of this?
After, yeah. Not while I was in school, per se, not for the first 3 years. But then when I started like doing soap operas, yeah.
There's money for that. Because those telenovelas are really people. That we don't understand that here.
Yeah.
We watch it here and go, ugh, what is that?
Yeah.
But there.
Yeah, it's the thing.
Big bucks, right?
Yeah. And it's so funny because like in Latin America, it's like soap operas. And here in the US, it's like movies, Hollywood, you know?
Right.
But it's the equivalent. Like it has a lot of depth for some weird, sick reason, but yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to save you this.
Okay.
I'll say it and then you can follow it up because it's there everywhere. In 1998, your mom took you to see Depeche Mode.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And suddenly, how old were you then? 15?
I was 15 years old.
Right? So you're 15.
Yeah.
And that got into your head.
It did. I remember that I sang every single song. It was when the singles album came out. So I know I knew exactly every song, and I fell in love with the idea of being on stage and listening to Martin Gore sing songs like Somebody or Question of Lust, you know, or Home. I was like, I want to do that.
So how do you transition?
Yeah.
From soap operas.
Back into music?
Back into music.
The thing is that, what happened back then? You know, it was something, I think it was because I had gone to school for 3 years for this. And suddenly, you know, I started, you know, doing the soap operas. And then, but then eventually, you know, I went back into music for some reason. I started writing more songs because I had been writing songs when I was younger, but this time I was just like, so I remember when I was writing these songs like on guitar and piano, these like new songs, and I was like, oh, maybe I should record an album. And so that's what I did. And initially it was like demos, and then I was like, okay, maybe I should look for a producer and have, you know, see it as in a more like global way. So that's what I did.
When you went to Oklahoma, which we're going to get to in a second. So let me try to put this in a way that makes sense.
Okay.
So you were still in the Bay Area.
I was.
You were still in San Mateo.
I was.
how did you find, produce, you wrote the songs yourself?
Every single one. Yeah.
100%. No co-writes. 100%.
No
co-write,
nothing.
None of that stuff.
None of that stuff.
So you do that, and then you go, okay, did you have a previous producer relationship by that point?
I didn't. I mean, I had a friend who I always worked with doing demos, but he was in Mexico. And the company that I'm with right now, Creative Entertainment Network, they were like, oh, we have this producer. His name is Wes Sharon, and we would like for you to.
So was that a management company?
Wes?
Well, the Creative Entertainment Network.
Yeah, that's who I, yeah.
So how did you get with them? When did they suddenly go, oh, because there's a lot of time in between here, but I want to compress it so we get to the important stuff.
Yeah, of course. A few years ago, I was struggling, looking for opportunity with, you know, people that were in the business that could launch my music. And like a lot of artists, you know, we stumble upon a lot of people that probably wish, you know, just really, you know, bad people.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. So eventually, I came across this lady. Her name is Julie Lichtenstein, who actually was the person who saved my life, and she was a consultant with me. And she said to me, "Well, you know, what is it you want to do?" And I said, "I want to perform my songs live." And classic story, I may know somebody who could launch your, you know, who could help you. So, and that person was Adam Pollock and Vinnie Rich, who are the president and vice president of Creative Entertainment Network. And she hooked me up with them, and
the rest is here.
The rest is I'm here. Yeah. And it's been a blessing.
So you write these songs and then they recommended a producer.
Yeah.
And then, and I've been in the producer's chair. I've produced records.
Cool. Awesome.
Well, cool. Awesome. But there's only a few types of producers.
Yeah.
How fully formed were these songs in your mind at that moment in time?
The songs were already made. I mean, lyric wise and melody wise.
Right.
And the only thing we had to do was, I just had to record them, you know, and obviously, you know, the arrangements and everything, but that's like cherry on the top. But the songs were already there.
So Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Because why?
Because that's where the producer is at, Wes. Yeah.
And when they serve you up a producer,
yeah,
and he's in Oklahoma,
yeah,
what's the first thing you did? You listened to his other things he's done.
Well, we had done he had worked on my EP.
Okay.
Yeah, but I had never been with him like physically, you know.
You gave him the stuff, and he then took
exactly,
it
and yeah.
did his magic with it.
Yeah.
So you went to Oklahoma, in the middle of COVID.
Yeah, it was
what
bizarre.
What is that like?
Well, I was...
Did you drive?
No. I flew.
Wow.
I flew, yeah. And I actually stayed at an Airbnb.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was Norman, Oklahoma, college town. But the good thing was that because of the COVID...
No one was
there. Nobody was there. So it was a really nice thing.
But very solitary, though, I would imagine.
Very solitary. But I was spending most of my time in the recording studio. I was there every single day except for like 2 or 3 days. Because we only had 1 month to record the album and do everything because the budget was so limited.
So where does the budget come from? Your management company that is investing in you?
Yeah.
So you make this thing.
Yeah.
You have a management company.
Yeah.
It exists. Uh-huh. It's mastered. It happens.
Yeah.
And then was it this same management company who found the rest of the team, the publicist who got you to me?
Yeah.
All of that?
Yeah. So it's been really great because it started, you know, it started initially just with a phone call. Vinny, Adam, and myself. I was just leaving. I was having lunch and then I was in my car. And we did a conference call, the three of us, and I could hear their voices. And the very first thing that came to my mind was, finally, there are some people who care about my music and who are going to take care of me.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So this thing gets in my hands. Yeah. I listen to it. I go, okay.
Yeah.
I'll play some of this.
Cool.
Now we get to have some fun. Now it's not even evil.
Uh-huh.
all these bands.
Yeah.
The Cure, The Smiths, U2, The Church, The Smirch, the
Joy Division.
I was going there.
Ah.
The Division of Joy,
yeah.
Factory Records, all of this.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Stuff.
My heroes.
But what did you borrow from them, and what do you feel you made original? How does it become you?
Yeah. Well, I think that even if you try to emulate something, your essence is always going to come out, no matter what. So, you know, I never went to music school. I'm just really bad with anything that has to do with technical stuff. So the bands that I grew up listening to, I think that instinctively they became my teachers, you know, because when I'd write certain songs, I was like, oh, okay, I can see the influence from here, from there. But yeah, I mean, when I'm writing songs, or even when I'm working like on arrangements, I'm never thinking, oh, where can I take, you know, or where can I borrow? I mean, it just comes out. And I think your essence is always going to come out no matter what, you know, when you put your heart and soul, especially when writing songs and working on it, because it's a very, it works a lot with your emotions and with everything, you know? So yeah, that's my answer to that.
So I'm going
to
circle way back. So your mom, when you said no training, your mom, I know your mom got you a guitar with nylon strings. See, I'm saving you repeating these same things.
Yeah.
And then you got a real guitar.
Yeah.
But your mom showed you chords.
Yeah, she taught me the E major chord. I remember that.
But
that was the
somewhere.
Very first. Yeah.
Where do you, I mean, with no formal training.
Yeah.
Is this just by sitting at home and figuring it out and listening to records and going and watching the tab things?
Yeah, I did used to do tablature and I loved it. I loved tablature. And I remember that one of the first songs I did was Pictures of You. And I remember that just looking at, because it was like, you know, so it was really easy. It wasn't anything that was like too elaborated. And so, yeah. And then obviously, you know, later I was like learning like all these chords, and you could see, you know, it's like, oh yeah, the third finger right here, second finger, first finger. And yeah. And just, you know, learning along the way.
Everybody asks you, well, where did it come from? And you said the Sex Pistols. But then you also said this.
Oh, I love this song.
You said this.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I love it. Cockney Rejects.
What was it about this that hit you? Because it's not unlike the Sex Pistols, but the guitar, it's not unlike. But what was it that split the difference for you?
You know, wow, that's a great question. When I hear the song and I listen to your question, I think about the something that Peter Hook said from Joy Division, who's my hero. He said that when he saw the Sex Pistols for the first time, it wasn't about being great. It wasn't even about being proficient. It was just about the thrill of getting up there and doing it. And I really related to that, because I never felt that I was a very like technically good
right,
musician.
Right, formally.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, I was actually, you know, kind of ignorant of a lot of music. And, you know, so it in many ways, I felt incapable. I felt like an outcast. So when I hear, you know, songs like, you know, the Cockney Rejects beginning to an end, you know, it made me feel like I could be good at something, you know, even if I wasn't great. Like I could just get up there and just play songs, you know, even if it's 2 or 3 chords, and just say something that's in my heart, and that would be good enough, you know.
But on the other hand,
yeah,
that one Sex Pistols record,
oh my God,
is impeccably produced. Yeah. Right? It's beautiful. It's, you know, there's a lot of punk stuff that for the sake of punk is sloppy.
But
that is not sloppy. It's sloppy in its nature of what they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, but I think it's like not so much that it's sloppy, but like for instance, a song like Anarchy in the UK. You know, when I hear it, it has a lot of wisdom, a lot of wit, but it uses a language that for me, it's like one of those songs that I listen to, and I feel like it speaks to me for some reason. And I've always felt like that with that song.
The record's out. You've never gotten to play it live.
Nope.
Nothing, right? Nope. So are there plans to do that?
Yes. December 9th at the Whiskey Go-Go.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And December 16th as well.
So I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Awesome.
And what it is two of your songs on the outside and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.